Hello, welcome to Monty and Reyes versus Movies.
Fantasy. Yep, we finished our year. Who knows, time means nothing during a pandemic. We finished up doing our post-apocalyptic films, and now we decided we'd move on to another genre, which is equally maligned for similar reasons.
Namely that a lot of it is cheap, cliched.
Ridiculous and terrible.
Yeah. And we started with a movie, Sword and the Sorcerer. Now, you might be thinking that it took us a while to record this episode, and you'd be right. In fact, we watched The Sword and the Sorcerer about...
2-3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago. And I want to say, before we get into this, I was determined to make this the best podcast about Sword and the Sorcerer ever. I read the novelization.
I think that's what caused the problem.
Here's the problem.
We watched the movie, and then about a couple hours later, we were getting ready to record the podcast, and something happened.
I had a stroke.
He did.
And not a little one, either. I was in the hospital for about a week while I recovered the ability to say my name.
It was really scary. Fortunately, it did not happen while we were recording the podcast. And fortunately, we caught it in time. Apparently, they say the faster you catch someone having a stroke, the easier it is for them to get them the whatever medical attention they need. And I believe I saw Monty fall off of the couch and called the ambulance within like 5 minutes.
But that has meant that going back to discussing the movie Sword and the Sorcerer, I mean, maybe this movie is so bad, it turned off half my brain.
That's what I was worried about. Actually, what I was worried about, among every other thing in my life, was that the last movie Monty and I would ever watch together would be The Sword and the Sorcerer.
So as you can see, already we're well on our way for this being the best podcast about Sword and the Sorcerer. Look at the drama you have here.
I have had drama with that movie before, too.
Oh, please tell us all about that.
Well, when it first came out, I did not live near a movie theater. The nearest movie theater was like 10 miles from my house, but I had a bicycle.
Okay.
And there was a field you could take a shortcut across.
Excellent.
And so I was riding as fast as I could because I wanted to catch every minute of this movie because it had my two favorite things in the title, swords and sorcerers. And I was a huge fantasy nerd as a child and as an adult. So I was cutting across the field and on my 10 speed, totally the best bike for going over land.
That's right.
And ran into a barbed wire fence.
Oh, no.
And one of the barbed wire pieces went directly into my chest.
This movie is cursed.
And I dragged my bike out of the fence and I threw it over and I climbed back on it and I rode to the theater.
Blood streaming down.
And I didn't see any blood. And when I went in, it was fine. But when I came out of the theater, my entire shirt was soaked with blood. And I still have a scar from it.
Wow.
That is the price I paid for watching Sword and the Sorcerer. Monty had a stroke. I think this film is cursed.
And what did you think of it back when you permanently maimed yourself for the privilege of seeing Sword and the Sorcerer?
I am embarrassed to say this, but I thought it was pretty good.
All right.
I had not watched it again until we watched it together, and now I see the folly of my ways.
Yeah. So we watched this on YouTube, where there was a really bad transfer, which I love, because it's like watching a shitty VHS.
Mm.
Like, I don't think every movie needs...
Yeah, this movie on a nice Blu-ray with a 4K... restoration, it's not the same.
Yeah.
So
right,
rewatching this movie, Monty's got the novelization here. I'm gonna let him give you a little taste of what we got going.
Here's how the novelization starts. None of this is in the movie. It was an unholy and howling night, fit for neither the ancient gods nor ordinary men. With each jagged burst of lightning across the rain-lashed heavens, the enraged, hydra-headed beast the sea had become seemed that much closer to crushing and devouring tiny Tomb Island.
Tomb Island?
The coastal waters encircling this rocky site boiled and erupted with mountainous waves, the pounding and ripping claws of an advancing typhoon. this barren strip of land was called Tomb Island because of its sepulchral rock formations and tomb-like caves, okay, and because the commoners, serfs, and shepherds on the mainland believed that the souls of demons, witches, wizards, and murderers resided there. This is such a delightfully overwritten novelization.
It's crazy. That's just the first paragraph.
Yeah. So the way the movie starts is a king shows up and resurrects a demon for some reason.
Right. And that king is played by my boy, Richard Lynch.
Yeah.
Y'all know I love him. He's super villainous. That's probably why I liked the movie when it first came out.
Sure.
He shows up to the island. He finds a grave. He summons a demon.
Now, although the people with him do not have any dialogue in the movie, they do in the novelization. And I just want...
Oh, really? Let's hear some of that.
I'm not going to do this the whole way because when I said I read the novelization, I really only read the first couple chapters. But the slouched, battle-weary figure closest to Cromwell was General Malcolm. Torchlight cruelly underscored the ravages of drink and drugs on his gaunt, strained face. Directly behind the King of Aragon fidgeted Cromwell's Minister of Finance, pudgy and effeminate Lord Buckingham. As usual in the face of any danger, Buckingham was scared as a rabbit trapped in a cave. And although Cromwell found Buckingham's cowardice and propensity for heavy perfumes and young boys distasteful, he tolerated his peccadilloes. No one had a better head than Buckingham for inventing reasons for levying taxes on the rabble or for thinking up new ways of enriching Cromwell's coffers with gold and talents. None of that is at all
in
the movie.
No, I don't even know if the character Cromwell shows up.
I think he's one of the guys.
Oh, I mean, Richard Lynch is Cromwell. I mean, the...
Yeah, yeah.
The heavily perfumed guy.
Yeah. He's one of the people.
Okay, whatever.
Now, there's a whole bunch of narration, and the movie starts with one of those boring lore crawls.
Ugh.
That, first of all right, let's get into this, because I just watched Mortal Kombat, which also started with one of those.
Okay.
Movies should not start with a lore crawl.
What? But Star Wars.
Yeah. I know everybody likes hearing about Trade Federation nonsense at the beginning of a movie.
So sexy.
But if there's lore that you need to understand to make your movie make sense, it's going to be explained to a character in the movie, right? Like, Mortal Kombat has this boring guy who doesn't know anything, and he's like, "What do you mean I'm a hero?" And then they have the little explanation. And you don't need the explanation at the beginning of the movie, and then 30 minutes later it happens again.
Well, I think that in movies like this, they put that on there so that the audience knows they're watching a movie set in a fake world. This is not a historically accurate drama. This takes place in the before times on a different planet.
Yeah, but they're not very imaginative, so the names of the people are still Cromwell and Buckingham.
Well...
All right, so
I kind of feel like those were placeholder names that they put in the script until they could think of a better name, and then they just decided they didn't want to do any changes to the script and just shoot right now.
Yeah. All right. I'm relying on my notes very heavily here because for some reason I don't remember exactly what happens in the movie.
I didn't write down what happens in the movie. I just wrote down observations about how bad the wigs are.
Right. So... Cromwell summons a demon to help him rule the world. He immediately falls out with the demon, threatens the demon with a sword, and the demon is the titular sorcerer.
Yes, I guess the demon is the sorcerer, although there is honestly not much sorcery in the movie.
Yeah.
You get that opening scene, and I think the demon shows up again at the end and takes revenge or something on Cromwell.
Yep.
Because Cromwell pushed him off a cliff and that killed him.
Yeah, the sorcerer is... Not anything. The sword, however, let's talk about the sword.
They call it the Talon.
Now, there are a lot of cool weapons in fantasy movies. There's the glaive, a famously pointy frisbee.
There's those, even though it's not technically a fantasy movie, there are those ridiculous see-through swords you get in Death Sport.
There's Hawk the Slayer that has a sword that will slowly hover up to your hand if you drop it.
Very slowly. It's really faster to pick it back up.
Yeah. And there's this movie, The Sword and the Sorcerer, where the titular sword has three blades.
Three blades, like a fork.
Yeah, but they're like parallel.
Yeah.
So, and there's a button on the handle that you can push, and the two outside blades will whoosh off and stab either somebody, or if they're somebody important, they'll stab the wall next to them.
Yes. Oh, my friends. This sword is awkward in so many ways. First off, it's obvious that it is so heavy the actors can barely lift it.
Yes. Like with Highlander, most of the time the sword is not visible anywhere until you need the sword, and then it's in somebody's hand.
Right, because there's no way you can make a sheath for that thing.
No.
No. And when the blades shoot off, they shoot off very slowly and are clearly tied to a string.
Yep.
In some kind of a, it's...
I'm going to say...
It's precious.
5 stars for stupid fantasy weapon for this movie.
Absolutely.
Like, they said, we want a weapon that's not in anything else, and they went for it. God bless them. All right, so there was a king and a queen and a prince named Talon who escaped.
Yes, yes. The king and Cromwell kills the king and queen to take their throne.
Yep.
I guess the demon helped him in some way, but I'm not sure what. Then the royal family is killed except for the prince who escapes with the sword.
Yes, and then years pass. And my next note is that Joe Rigoletto? And Joe Rigoletto played Frank Fontana on Murphy Brown. And he's in this movie, and I was very excited to see him. I think he is acting very well in this movie.
At least someone is.
Yeah.
He's giving it his best shot.
Okay, let's see.
All right,
see.
What do we got here?
A lady has a map of the castle's secret passages.
Wait, first we've got... I've got a little more notes between there. So, word gets out that there's going to be a rebellion.
Yes.
The person leading the rebellion is the princess...
Yes.
Who is not related to the prince who survived, but she's the daughter of the king's advisor.
Sure.
And our hero, who is described as pirate, slave, rogue, general.
Wearer of one of the dumber wigs.
Wearer of one of the worst wigs in the film. One of. There's some that are a lot worse.
Yeah. The hairstyle in this movie is very Prince Valiant for everybody.
Yeah. They got a discount on the Prince Valiant week. So anyway, word gets out that a rebellion is happening and both sides are hiring mercenaries. The girl with the map to the sewers is in a comes to hire mercenaries and meets our hero, whose name I cannot remember or be bothered with.
That's right.
He's played by Lee Horsley.
Elaborate on that. Lee Horsley? You say, like, I know who Lee Horsley is?
I don't know who Lee Horsley is either. I just saw the name on the back of the novelization.
Okay, carry on.
And I didn't remember the character's name, so I thought maybe I could fill it in that way and not be questioned about it. But no.
Go on. I will look up Lee Horsley while you...
All right.
Oh, he was Matt Houston.
Yeah, he was Matt Houston. You guys remember Matt Houston. So anyway... Our hero meets this girl who wants to hire him to be a mercenary, and
I think
he refuses to accept money for the job because he wants to have sex with her.
Yeah, I think,
and it's gross.
I think he is hired to rescue her brother from the king's dungeons.
Yes, he is, and she is. Oh, he rescues her from being nearly raped.
At this point, my notes do say, man, this movie is incoherent. So don't get mad at us.
There are way too many plot threads in this movie. Yeah. It needed 2. It's got like 5.
My note after that is, the army has flamethrowers, which immediately all catch fire. Remember that? That was hilarious.
That was pretty funny. My notes say, in the tavern, there is an attempted rape, a small penis joke, and the princess is rescued by our hero. She hires him to rescue her dumbass brother. But Oh, our hero's name is Talon. Yeah. I'm sorry, I thought that was the name of the sword. But Talon is being gross and wants to have sex with her as payment, so she agrees to his sexual blackmail in exchange for getting her brother out of jail.
He's the hero.
This is the hero who is sexually blackmailing this poor woman.
Yes. So he goes in, he gets captured almost immediately, as I remember. He gets all greased up.
Yeah, yeah. They grease you up in the jails in this
movie. Yeah. Apparently the entire rebel army has been put in jail, including the guy who is the architect for the castle, who says that he put in lots of hidden passages and secret exits, but I guess he didn't put any in the jail.
No, why would you do that? Yeah, so they meet the architect of the castle. They meet a guy who has the worst wig I have ever seen in any film, who is a pirate captain.
Oh, yeah.
Pirate captain, African-American actor, I believe probably an athlete, judging by his build and his acting ability.
In my opinion, this guy works out more than he runs lines.
Yeah, which is fine. Guy's got to pay his bills.
At some point, Talon starts being referred to as the barbarian with the gauntlet of steel.
I don't remember that. I didn't see him having a steel gauntlet at any point.
I didn't see him having a steel gauntlet, but he is referred to as though everybody notices his steel gauntlet. He even later on, he's crucified on an X at a big party. Where the evil king is getting ready to marry the lady who's been drugged.
The princess, yes.
And he still has the metal gauntlet. And I thought that was weird.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be hard to drive the crucifixion nail through that.
Yeah, he is up there on that X for a long, long time.
Wearing a loincloth and lots of baby oil. The baby oil budget in this film, through the roof.
Yeah.
My notes on this film...
I'm already at the final fight.
Okay. Are that there are way too many factions. First of all, there's Cromwell.
Yes.
Then there's the demon.
Yes.
Then there's the dude who is claiming the throne.
Yes.
That's the princess's brother.
Right.
That's in jail. Then there is our hero.
Who we know is actually the rightful heir.
Right. And some pirates who work with our hero. And finally, Cromwell's advisor.
Yeah.
Who is also up to some nonsense, but is not nearly as gay in the film as in the book.
No.
There is a guy loading that we see who is a general in Cromwell's army who is wearing armor covered with rhinestones. And I'm here for that.
So eventually, everybody who's in jail gets let out. There's a big fight, which is kind of shirts versus skins.
It is, because nobody in jail has a shirt.
That's right. We learn that the triple sword, which he now has somehow, I don't have any idea where it came from. He was shirtless and crucified.
It's none of your damn business. Yeah, he was shirtless and crucified in a loincloth. I don't know how he managed to have a three-bladed sword, but it's magical. It's a magical sword.
We learn that the sword is so powerful that when you swing it against a regular sword, the regular sword breaks. He does that a few times.
Probably just because the three-bladed sword is so heavy.
Yeah. He shoots this blades. Then
pew, pew.
It turns out there's a fourth blade. There's a dagger in the handle.
What? A fourth blade in the three-bladed sword?
I really wonder how much work it is to reassemble this sword. It reminds me of the Kurgan sword in Highlander, the one that he has in a little suitcase that he screws together.
Yep. Yeah, this is like that. It's just like after every battle, you have to run around, find the blades, put them all back together, clean it so that it'll work next time. That sword is way more trouble than it is worth.
And then Talon lets what's-her-name's brother be king, and that's kind of the end of the movie.
Oh, no, he gets to collect his payment.
Oh, that's
right. Because
she's
secretly into him.
Yeah, well, he's greasy as heck.
Ugh. So there, that is The Sword and the Sorcerer.
I did not think it was a very good movie.
I didn't either. It was awful, and I am embarrassed that I used to like it. But when you're like 12 years old, what are you going to do?
Well, there were fewer fantasy movies back then. You had to take what they gave you.
I was probably older than 12. But yes, it's true. That's a thing I wanted to talk about, was there was a point when, during the 80s, when Conan came out, and I was like, oh my God, a fantasy film that is cool and that I really like.
Yeah.
And so then it got me hooked, and I would go see every film that came out that was a fantasy film in the theater. I saw your Deathstalkers. I saw your Beastmasters. I saw your Barbarian Queens. I watched a million things. And you know what?
What's that?
They were terrible.
They were,
they
yes.
They were. And by today's standards, even Conan is not a great film. But compared to what else we had at the time, it was miles above.
Yes, it was.
It was.
As opposed to Miles O'Keefe.
Yes, exactly.
Who I'm guessing you saw plenty of.
I saw more Miles O'Keefe than I needed to, quite frankly. But he was your sword swinging boy. He got to do all the sword swinging.
Yeah. So I now have very negative feelings about this movie.
I understand that.
Because I think it broke my brain.
I don't think it actually broke.
It may not have, but I'm not going to watch it again to find out.
No. But the good news is, we watched it. We don't have to watch it again. We're done with it.
Yes. Now
is the time on Sprockets when we pick the next film.
Oh, just like we did with Post-Apocalypse Year, we have a box full of cards and cards with movies on them.
That's me shuffling the cards. All right. Here, you want me to pick?
I want to pick.
All right. Oh, the suspense.
This one. No.
Yeah, that one, I think.
Well, that's two. This one. That's two again. This one.
Some of the papers got folded.
The movie we will be watching next, Barbarian Queen.
Oh, Barbarian Queen. That has that nice girl in it that got murdered.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm excited about it because I remember literally...
Me either.
And I like ladies with swords.
Yeah.
It's a thing with me.
All right. Thank you for listening. I promise we will not go too long before another podcast.
Well, I think that having a stroke gives you an out. I think it's okay.
I had a stroke, people. An actual stroke.
We could have recorded it earlier, but they wouldn't let me into the hospital with the recording equipment.
Yeah. Well, apparently there's a pandemic going on. That's a whole other thing.
Yes. So anyway, on the bright side...
I said
side,
this was going to be the best Sword and the Sorcerer podcast, not the most feel-good Sword and the Sorcerer podcast.
So join us next time when we talk about Barbarian Queen.
And I will send you out with the final paragraph of the novelization. The only sign of life was a life that defied comprehension, logic, and any human compassion, for how can pure evil inspire compassion? It was a form of life that appeared to be the outgrowth of a grotesque union between the human, demonic, and reptilian worlds. And the bliss that this hybrid creature experienced while standing at the stern of the galleon, 1,000 sword cuts in its body slowly and mysteriously closing without scars, was the bliss of merciless revenge he plotted, gazing back at the kingdom of Adon he was leaving, but only long enough for Shusha to recharge his powers. That's the demon. I think this is but the demon's still alive.
Oh, because they're setting you up for a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Right. Okay, bye.
Bye.